This is the Working Drummer Podcast, featuring conversations with ground-level pros from all styles and regions. Real drummers with real stories about making a living in music.
Hey everyone, welcome to Working Drummer Podcast. I'm Zach Albetta, and this week I'm talking with Ty Bailey. Ty is an organist and keyboardist and one of my best oldest friends. Those of you who have listened to the podcast for a while have heard him talked about frequently because of the role he's played in my life and the many drummers we've interviewed in LA, Seattle, and Nashville who have also played with him. He's currently on tour with Mitski, and his resume also includes Don Felder, Joss Stone, Tanya Tucker, Wilder Woods, a long stint with Katy Perry during his LA days, and his own group, Uncle Bronco, in Nashville. We have tons of Patreon content for you to check out, and you can get access to it all for a buck a month. Matt and I are doing monthly installments of the two of us just catching up about recent guests and whatever else, and our old buddy Matt Iceman is contributing some video content. As always, there are video lessons, transcriptions, and bonus interview content from our former guests. Once again, a donation of $1 a month gets you access to everything at patreon.com/workingdrummer. So Ty is obviously not a drummer, but we're known to talk with a non-drummer from time to time. I've been wanting to do this with Ty for a long time, and we finally had the perfect opportunity recently when he brought me up to Nashville to play a jazz gig with him. I think Ty's approach to making music and his disposition towards the people he does it with and for is something we can all learn from. So here, at last, is Ty Bailey. Set your phone to interview.
Interview mode.
Yeah, that's an Apple feature only available in Nashville.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. What? Who are you? Who am I? What are we doing?
Well, I'm Zach Albetta, and if you may remember, we go back a ways.
We do.
We've played a lot together.
That is very true. Though this is the first time I think I've ever been obligated to talk to you. Yeah, the one time I have to talk, I just choked on my teeth.
Right, it's apparently causing a bit of a respiratory crisis.
Oh, man. Woo. Okay, we're back. Yes, Zach Albetta, you're one of my best friends. We've played together so much back in the day.
I know, and I'm so grateful for all of it. And I'm so grateful for last night, because that was so much fun and badass.
What did we do? Tell people what we did.
I don't remember. It was all a blur. No, we did the Dr. Lonnie Smith, Joey DeFrancesco tribute at the Nashville Jazz Workshop
with Adam McPhail
on guitar.
Yes, he was.
And we burned it the fuck down.
We did. Yeah, we swung him dead, as they say. Nobody says that. We say that. We're coining a new term. Yeah, it was fantastic time.
Yeah. And man, it was much needed for me. Like, as you know, I've just been constantly on the road playing the same show over and over again. And it was a great show and it was a fun show, but I did it over 450 times. Oof. And when you called me for this gig, it was just like a gift.
Kismet. Yeah, well, it was a gift that you're available.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we'll grab you when we can. Because, yeah, you're a busy dude.
Yes.
I said, you're a big, big fancy touring guy. So you're tall, you're picky, and they pay you money to play music.
Those are the criteria.
There. Yeah.
I think I'm just going to rename the podcast Big Fancy Touring Drummer.
I'm still not going to listen to it. We should probably establish that. I've never listened to this podcast. Yes, why am I on here? I'm not a drummer. I don't care.
No, you're on here, A, because you're one of my best, oldest friends and favorite musicians.
Aww.
And, you know, B, once in a while we do interview a non-drummer just
okay.
to get their perspective and make sure we're not crazy.
Well, I'm glad us non-drummers can be seen this day and age by you drum people.
Right.
Yes.
Right. You've just played with a shitload of drummers in a bunch of different cities, and I think you have a great perspective on drummers and drums and drumming.
Is it perspective, or am I just worn down?
Well, I mean,
have I just been broken?
You know, six from column A and six from column B.
I'm not doing that math, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we'll start with like now and maybe work our way back a little bit. Your main thing right now is with Mitski.
Yes, I'm on tour this year, 2024, in the Gregorian calendar. with the artist Mitski. We're doing a proper world tour. We're right in the middle of it. We just did four nights here at the Ryman here in Nashville, and we're shipping off to Europe for 7 weeks next week. And it's fantastic. It's a great situation.
Cool.
And there's drums in that show too. So that all lines up.
Yeah, you do tend to play shows with drums in them.
Drums almost, yeah, quite often, whether I have a say in it or not.
I mean, if you had a say, it would just be like you and
just me.
Just me.
just be me.
Just you and the Leslie.
Maybe the Leslie would be involved. By the way, I'm an organ player, in case nobody knows on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
do you do like an intro or anything like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I probably will have covered that in the intro, but,
okay.
You know, who knows?
Well, it's fun to say over and over again.
I'm a B3 player.
I'm a B3 player. I haul a B3 around. Yeehaw.
Well, I love that in your on your Instagram profile, it doesn't list all of your gigs, and it just says B3 hauler.
Well, let's just get to the core of it. Yeah. I haul a B3 around.
Right. It's a, you know, two huge ass pieces of furniture.
Yeah.
That you are committed.
Absolutely.
To transporting anywhere and everywhere.
I'm committed to the lifestyle. I drive a crappy van. I haul a B3 around. Play in bars for $50 and beer and burn it down. I'm a working class B3 hauler guy.
Yeah. And I think
at my core,
it's one of the things I love about you, because I think, you know, from before I even met you, this was mm-hmm. part of your work ethic and part of your, I don't want to say persona, but part of the way that you marketed yourself is like in the age of Nords.
Yeah.
You were the guy that always brought the real thing.
Right. Yeah. And it wasn't, yeah, I don't think it wasn't like a manufactured, I'm going to be that guy. It's just like, hey, man, this sounds better, and it's fun. Let's do this. And, like, you know, I grew up on a hay farm. I've been throwing my back out since I was 12. So, like, it fits right in with the whole damn thing,
yeah.
Whatever my thing is.
And it worked, because when you and I first started playing together in L.A., mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody, I don't know, and I was, you know, just really excited about getting to play with you, and it's like, mm-hmm. holy shit, this guy's badass. And I was telling my friend, do you know this guy Ty Bailey? Like, he moved to town recently. And the first thing they said was, is he the guy that just like hauls the B3 and the Leslie everywhere? I was like, yes, that's the guy.
Yep, that's me. I'm a simple guy. I mean, you haul a B3 and a Leslie into any room, and it's universal. People, you know, whether you've listened, heard it before, or you've, you know, been to church or been to listen, it's just like a universal experience,
yeah.
To like be in a room with a Hammond B3 and a Leslie.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
Just going to hit you. And if it doesn't, you're dead inside and get out.
That's true. And like, yeah. when I wrote a bio for Rump Roller, the trio,
yeah.
that you were in,
yeah.
in LA, like
boys.
I was talking with Kevin and he made this point, and he wanted to make it part of the bio that like the organ and specifically the Hammond B3
mm-hmm.
is woven into American life,
mm-hmm.
no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, no matter what sort of social strata,
yeah,
you know, it's at the church, it's at the ballpark, it's mm-hmm. in the living room, it's in the dive bar.
Uh-huh.
So everybody just like, they hear B3 and they're like, oh yeah, that, I know that.
Kevin came up with that?
Well, I made it more poetic.
Shout out to Kevin Stevens, fantastic drummer.
Yes, sir.
And apparently just our generation's poet.
Oh man. Yeah. So when it comes to the B3, like, I've said numerous times on this podcast how playing with the B3 and playing with you specifically just sort of puts me in a different mindset. It's almost like putting a head harness on a dog. It just chills them out immediately.
Oh. Okay, I will say this, if we're getting into the specifics, that's why you're so fun to play with on drums. It's not because, you roll over and, I get to scratch your belly.
Well, there's that, too.
But but some drummers kind of freak out when it's organ bass.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really kind of know how to get with it because it's not providing kind of that plucked attack.
Right.
And it's more, the Hammond B3 is more like a wave that you kind of surf, and you just got to be cool with it to be a good organ drummer. And you either got it or you don't. You could tell good organ drummers almost immediately.
Why?
Because of that. Because they don't panic. They don't panic. Some guys will panic. They're like, oh, what is this? This bass sound is not, it's not like electric bass. That's just the attack of it's drilling you in the face,
right.
With the quarter notes. It's more of a feeling and a vibe
kind of
thing.
And it was sort of subconscious when I first started playing with you, but after a couple gigs, I realized I'm like you said, I'm not panicking. I don't feel the need to panic.
Yeah.
I just, it playing with the B3 made me feel the need to play clean and simple.
Sure.
And just sort of provide the point on the pulse that the B3 doesn't really provide.
Sure.
So it just sort of, took away a lot of my, jazzy bullshit options that I usually chose from.
Yeah. Cool. All right. It's just, some guys I'm kicking bass with my feet and my left hand. And so some guys will try to focus in on that. That's the bass player as opposed to right hand stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then that gets a disconnect. You have to listen to the B3 as a whole. You kind of have to zoom out.
Right.
And think of it as it's,
not unlike the drum set.
Not unlike the drum set. Yeah.
They're kind of kindred spirits, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Hey, I have a drum kit now. You want to tell people about it?
Oh, man, I'm so excited about
this drum set. We're
looking at it. So those of you in Nashville and those of you who follow Nelson Drum Shop on IG might have seen this late 60s Blue Strata Ludwig Standard kit. And it's in Ty's studio now
because
I went and grabbed it yesterday.
You can't have it. It's mine.
And those in Nashville familiar with Fred Eltringham will sort of hold special intrigue for this kit because there's one of those custom-made Fred badges that the guy from Fork's Drum Closet would make for Fred and kind of put those on the kick drum.
I'm going to tell everybody it was in Right Said Fred. I'm going to say that's where I got it. It was a...
Yeah, that'll go.
That'll
over.
Be, yeah, oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if anybody in Nashville is looking for this kit, it's at Ty's studio. So come bang on it.
Nope. Stay away. No. Yeah. We're going to throw some mics on it. We're going to start recording the dang thing. It's going to be great.
Yeah. So, speaking of your studio, this is a great little space you got here. And you're obviously tracking all sorts of keyboard nonsense.
Yes, it's full of keyboards.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it your ambition to do more? Obviously, you've got the drum set in here. Mm-hmm. Are you wanting to start making more full-fledged productions in here?
Well, ambition is a funny word. It kind of implies that, I have a direction and goal in life. And
it doesn't seem like you ever have.
No, that's not really my thing.
You just end up on these huge fucking tours.
Well, I've bumbled my way into some kind of ridiculous situations. Yeah, I do. And I'm very thankful for it. I moved to Nashville and ended up with this studio here, and I've been building it out for a few years, and I'm just filling it full of keyboards. And I love playing keyboards on people's stuff. So let's have a little keyboard tracking room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is going to be more than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Eventually, it's not a huge place, but it's a cool place. Sounds great.
Yeah. It really does sound
and
good.
And yeah, we'll get some production going on here. But is it a big goal? I'm still having a great time being on the road. I want a mix of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was one of my questions and things I was wondering about you is you've been doing this sort of series of basically touring life.
Yeah.
Some, huge fucking arena tours and some more small time, whatever.
Yeah.
And if I could write a script for you, if I could instill an ambition in you, it would be to do more music directing and more producing, and probably more like staying in Nashville and doing music here than flying all over the goddamn world all the time.
That, yeah. I mean, sure. Sure, Zach. Thanks for that.
Is that a plan?
If that's kind of where things start turning, then absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to, like...
I'm still having a great time flying around the world and, you know...
Yeah.
Doing this ridiculous thing. But yeah, but I mean, you know, at some point my body's going to break. I mean, you know, so yeah. So, it, you know, having something going here in the studio is, yeah, it should be an ambition.
Yeah.
Just starting right now.
Okay.
You heard it here, folks. It Ty Bailey's staying home and wants to play his prophet all over whatever song you got. Yeah.
So with the Mitski thing, like you do get to play quite a bit of actual organ.
Yeah, man, they hired me specifically to play organ.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there to provide organ. And I do some synth and a little bit of piano and EP stuff. But
right.
Yeah, it's organ, baby.
And it seems to be a pattern with the gigs that you, maybe not all of them, but like people see you play organ and they're like, sometimes they want you to do just that and sometimes they don't want you to do that
at
all.
Oh, well, like, you know, like you were saying when I was playing in L.A., yeah, I was hauling the B3 around, had a steady down in Hollywood there with the Rump Roller guys, and that caught the wind of eventually Katy Perry's MD, who came out to watch me and got me an audition when they needed a keyboard player. And I got the gig, and then I didn't play B3 for 5 years. It's like, oh, this guy plays B3 real good. Let's make him play synthesizers in arenas.
Right. I mean, and that's like, I remember you saying, like, you know, I got the huge arena Nord gig by hauling the 450-pound 60-year-old instrument into the dive bar.
But I mean, yeah, but also, like, you know, if you could play B3, you can figure anything out. And like, I do play all the other keyboards.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you played all the other keyboards before you came to the B3.
Yeah, for sure.
But I just, I love this this sort of pattern where people see you play B3 and they're like, oh my God, I want that guy.
And then not have him play anymore.
Right. I don't care what keyboard he's going to play.
Yeah.
Like, he can...
Let's dress him in a hip hop zebra pajamas and have him jump around on stage. That's the guy.
I think they can tell you're extroverted and you're not scared of anything.
Maybe it just sets a tone.
Yeah.
Just like, this guy's serious, but also he's having a good time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe, I don't know, maybe that's what people want in their band.
Yeah. I mean, this is something I've always wondered about you, and I've tried to get a straight answer out of you, and I don't think I'm going to succeed here either. But your whole disposition, whether it's... you know, in terms of playing or in terms of just hanging in a room with people, is you have this ability to just make everybody feel good about being there. And you, you know, you're extroverted, you're always positive, you're never cynical.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered if this is just your nature, if this is how you came into the world, or if it's a learned skill as you navigated different cities and different scenes?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm a sociopath, if that's what you're implying. No, I guess I'm wired for happiness, you know, for the most part. I mean, yeah, we have dark nights of the soul and life's not always great, but like, you know.
So what does that look like?
What does what look like?
What is the, like, when you're not feeling great about yourself or about the music you're playing?
Yeah.
What goes on in your head? Because all we ever experience is what comes off your face and what comes out of your mouth, which is always great and happy in a party.
Uh-huh.
So, like, are there times, have there been times when you seriously doubted yourself, when you doubted the path you were on?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Imposter syndrome's everywhere. Everybody's got that. If you don't have that, again, back to the sociopath. what a great gift it would be to not have any of that. But like, you know, you live with it, you deal with it, and you cram it down, you shove it deep, and you get on with the day.
Is that the way? Is that healthy?
Yeah, that's, I haven't been to therapy, but I'm guessing that's what they tell you. Yeah.
It's not.
No, but life is ridiculous and heartbreaking, but beautiful at the same time, and short and fleet. But you just, if you just keep surrounding yourself by people like yourself, and you can get through it and have a good time with it.
Okay. Also, I'll let you off the hook about this existential conversation and turn it to music specifically.
Okay.
You have, like I said, you have an ability to, like, first of all, you're musically agnostic.
Oh, sure. That's a great way to put it.
I don't think you hold any judgment or cynicism or superiority.
I don't.
About any kind of music or any kind of musician.
No, that's true.
And yeah, it gives you this ability, like when you're playing in any sort of group, mm-hmm. you have an ability to just make everybody sound good doing what they do, mm-hmm. and make them feel good about what they're doing.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, just not be a jerk and just, well, yeah. We're all on the same team. We're trying to play music, you know? And like, well, so if anything, that I think I do have a little bit of an ability to like, check the ego and get on board with whatever the artist's vision is. Mm-hmm. I think that's important because mm-hmm. I respect that. I respect people that can create something out of nothing that resonates with other people. And so being included in that in some small way to me is really important. Mm-hmm. And I take it very seriously. And that's just kind of, checking your ego at the door when, I mean, we have to have an ego to perform and jump around on stage, but yeah, knowing how to support, knowing how to, inspire, knowing how to instigate.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to instigate something up there too,
That's true.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to have an antagonistic relationship with the drummer in particular. Can be a very, very exciting thing. Yeah.
So like, can you give an example of a drummer specifically that you've sort of had that relationship with and sort of maybe brought something out of them, or they've brought something out of you?
Oh, well, it's a battle with some guys. Well, I mean, we were just hanging out with Old Patar last night.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Who I got a trio here in Nashville called Uncle Bronco, and it's me, Patar Yannick, and Adam McPhail, and we're all just absolute jerks to each other on stage. We're instigating all kinds of trouble and chaos, and that's the energy. Mm-hmm. And we, it's just brothers up there going for it. Mm-hmm. And that band is, it's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, we embrace it, and just that's the vibe. So it's not like a fight or anything, but up there, but we're not going to just again roll over,
right,
and let each other walk all over us. So yeah, I get it, Patar. 16th notes. It's cool. Let's go.
More than 16th.
More than 16th notes.
I mean,
yeah.
I think 16th notes are like his default setting in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
So in terms of like getting hip to an artist's vision, is it always obvious to you what that is? Like, how do you go about ascertaining that?
Well, okay. So just like this year alone, Mitski, whose music is dark and beautiful and intense and extremely intelligent and weird, and totally resonates with me because of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the song forms are wild. The lyrics hit you like a ton of bricks and you don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a powerful artistic vision. So to me, it's like, it's easy to get on board with that. Just not think about, listen to the song. What's the song creating in your head,
mm-hmm.
and get behind that and not thinking about, oh, I can play a cool lick right here.
Right.
Boobity boobity boo. So that's that instant. Another thing I'm doing this year is I'm playing a lot with Don Felder from the Eagles. And those are Eagles tunes.
Right.
We know what to do. Right. So yeah, play some Eagles tunes. It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Hotel California plays itself. Just don't mess it up. Later this summer, I'm going to play a couple shows with Eric Church, the country artist. Again, that's going to be a gear shift too. It's rock and country.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to, be able to speak the vocabulary of all these different genres.
Right.
To me is important.
How do you avoid sort of making a judgment about the kind of musician you are and the musical identity that you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
I let me put it a different way. We talk all the time about, it's easy to become a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Sure.
And as I'm getting older, I'm sort of whittling down the mm-hmm. kinds of music and the kinds of drumming that I really give a shit about and that I think I'm good at.
Yeah.
Is that happening for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm still trying to be a sponge, and I actively check out stuff that I normally wouldn't.
That's another thing about you. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you are up on so much new music, whether it's pop or country or whatever. Like, whether or not you're really into the music, I feel like you take it upon yourself. Like, it's part of your job to just be aware of a lot of shit.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, yeah, and I think that's just a healthy muscle to keep flexing. If you want to, I don't consider myself like a very relevant musician. I'm not cutting edge on any of this stuff, man.
Right, right.
But I'm checking it out and taking what I like from different genres and different players and trying to make it my own and put a spin on it. But it's important to me to do my homework in that way.
Is it hard to do sometimes? Do you have to force yourself to do it? Because like when I listen to music, my relationship with listening to music is, first of all, not as active as it should be.
Yeah.
Like that muscle you talked about of like, mm-hmm. you know, listening to new stuff and just being aware of stuff, uh-huh. like it's kind of atrophied for me.
Well, one thing that kind of puts in perspective to me is like, we're never going to hear it all, man.
Yeah.
There's so much out there and there's so many different genres worldwide and little pockets of this and that and the internet and like, I'm not even on TikTok. How can you call me a, you know, I don't have my pulse on, my thumb on the pulse of, you know, everything.
Sure.
You know, like I have my lane, I have a lot of lanes, but just knowing that like, you're not going to get it all. So you just putting forth the effort, I think is worthy enough to a degree. And like, again, like I'm a keyboard player. I should know what's going on with keyboards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And who's doing what and how they're playing them on songs and how they're being utilized and
yeah.
what sounds are kind of like,
that's cool, a good point. Cause like, I think that instrument, and that whole world sort of, moves faster and is used in, you know, a much bigger variety of ways than the drums.
Yeah.
Like the drums are the fucking
sure.
drums.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's triggers, there's samples, there's you know, the Kit Kat pad.
Yeah. What?
You know, the
Kit Kat off.
the SPDX, all that shit. Like
yeah.
that stuff does move uh-huh. and we kind of like, you know, the keyboard world and the drum world overlap a little bit in that way. But
sure.
the keyboard world, it just seems like this, you know, huge suite.
Yeah, and there's so many different facets of it too. There's like, you know, sound design, production stuff, and playback kind of gets wrapped up in it sometimes,
right.
and all that kind of technical stuff. Which like I'm not a dummy, I can learn, but like I'm definitely not like cutting edge with any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
But if you want like a sick Moog solo, yeah, man, I'm your guy. But here's a random analogy. So, you know, I grew up on a farm, an alfalfa hay farm. I know how to produce high quality alfalfa hay. I know how to do that
uh-huh.
from the bottom to the top. I know how to do that.
Yeah.
I have no idea how soybeans are grown. So I don't, you know, so like
right.
I've seen like, you know, in different specializing too much. And I tried to garden one time. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I can't grow anything.
Right.
But again, 300 acres of alfalfa hay, I got you.
Right,
yeah.
right. But in your yard, it's like, it's,
oh, I don't
it's,
got a lawn. Look
right,
at that. Yeah.
Right. You're like, it's less than 300 acres.
Yeah, what do I do with this? I put something in it, it dies. Like, all right. So like over specialization, I think is, I try to avoid it just because I think it's healthier to not.
Yeah.
But also, like, I'm not like a traditionalist or genre guy either.
For
too,
sure.
You know, which is like, you come from a jazz background.
Yeah.
And we all know the guys that, you know, it's bebop or nothing.
Right.
Which is great. And like, you know, a lot of people can excel with that and have careers with that. But I don't have the patience and talent to just like pick a thing.
Right.
Like, that's my thing.
Right.
That's all I'm going to do. And I'm going to be the best in the world at it. It's just like, nah, it's, I'm an omnivore. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that it kind of surprised me. Well, it didn't surprise me, but when you took the Katy Perry gig,
mm-hmm.
We had known each other a few years at that point, and mm-hmm. I thought of you as like the thoroughbred B3 guy.
Yeah.
And you are that in many ways, but like,
yeah, that's what I do when I do my thing.
Right.
That's
what you do when you do your thing.
When I do my thing, it's going to be B3
yeah.
for the most part.
Yeah. So, but when you did the Katy Perry gig, I was like, man, those are some tight handcuffs, seemingly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, but that was the gig. You either get on board with that or not.
Right.
Yeah, you're not gonna put a ripple in Katy Perry's artistic vision. Yeah, it's a circus. You know, you're just lucky to be involved and play your role.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's fine. There's plenty of living in boxes can be actually pretty nice sometimes.
That's true. I mean, you know? I just lived in one, like, literally. Like,
literally, yeah, dude.
And, I, you know, the what the Ain't Too Proud show was made of as far as the mm-hmm. drumming, I think, is closer to, you know, my blood type mm-hmm. than the Katy Perry thing was to your blood type.
Right.
You're more omnivorous and more agnostic than mm-hmm. I am musically. Yeah. But yeah, there's like a real beauty and a real sort of meditation in doing a very specific thing mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Yeah.
And you know, I've thought about this a lot, how like the, you know, the Ain't Too Proud gig I did, the Disney gig I did, mm-hmm. the Katy Perry gig you did, mm-hmm. And the types of touring gigs, the types of shows mm-hmm. that a lot of musicians do, like, it's all pretty prescriptive. It's yeah. all pretty formulaic.
Yeah.
You know, on a tour like Mitski's, mm-hmm. the set list might not be the same every single night, mm-hmm. but like those tunes in that show tend to go the same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the Broadway world is just like a more extreme example yeah. of that.
But that's the show.
Right.
That's the package. That's the thing that you're presenting. Mm-hmm. If what you're presenting is just going out there and jamming all the time, that's a different thing, and that's great too.
Yeah.
You know, go watch Fish or yeah. God, no. Or, you know, I mean, yeah, it's nobody's going to a Mitski show. They want to hear the Mitski songs.
Right.
So that's our job.
Right.
You know, because that's what's resonated with people.
Yeah.
Not cool keyboard licks, you know? yeah. Was that a question? Did I answer anything?
I don't know. I don't remember the question.
I think you're just trying to have me explain myself. Well, the other thing is, like, I don't have that thing inside me that makes me feel like I need to inflict my personality upon the world.
See,
all
you
the time.
And I don't have that in common.
Yo, you feel you need to inflict yourself upon
everybody? Oh, I
need
everybody. To be understood.
I absolutely don't have that. If you guys don't get me, that's great. I don't care.
Well, I think you don't care because, like, you don't really get you either. You don't have to.
I mean, am I just a simpleton? I don't know.
No, I don't.
I'm one of the happier people I know.
That's true.
So it's working.
That's it. A large role in my life, musically and personally, because you've helped me figure out who I want to be behind the drums, but you've also helped me just not take myself so goddamn seriously.
Okay.
And I do still take myself quite seriously, but I've come a long way.
I see, you tell me that, and I've never known, I don't think I knew that Zach. I think when I met that Zach, you were already kind of on your way. So maybe, well, you know, maybe I put a little fuel to the fire, but I think you're already...
Well, the first person that helped me not take myself so goddamn seriously was Christina.
Oh, yeah, like, she's rad.
She had already done some of the
yeah,
some
of the she did probably most of the heavy lifting.
She did.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, so, what a saint. Saint
indeed,
Christina.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of good advice from you, either directly or indirectly, and sometimes it was like a really prescriptive conversation, like the one we had right before I moved out of LA, mm-hmm. and I was getting ready to move to Atlanta, mm-hmm. and you just sort of first of all, we were drunk.
Sounds right.
There were a few Negronis.
Negronis, copy.
And, yeah.
That sounds like us.
But you just told me basically, like, when you get to Atlanta, like, just be a little bit mysterious. Because you sort of illustrated how when you get to a new scene, you could tell that my impulse, like what I had done in LA, was mm-hmm. to show up there and lay all my cards on the table,
okay.
and hope they were received favorably.
Yeah.
And sometimes they were, but a lot of times they were just sort of like, okay, mm-hmm. he's a very specific thing, and he's just told me everything about himself.
Yeah.
And so your point was, like, let people assume a couple of things about you, mm-hmm. right? Don't be super pronounced in the way you dress or what you talk about in terms of your resume.
Yeah.
You can be a little bit vague, let people assume things about you and throw a gig your way that they might not throw your way if you had been so specific and so sort of forceful in telling them who you are.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think that's... so anything that's any like career opportunities that have ever come my way that are like good and cool and like of whatever level has always been a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've never been able to, I know people that have been like, I want that gig. Mm-hmm. I'm going to form my whole thing just to get that gig. And they get that gig.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, how'd you do that? That's wild.
Yeah.
Damn. And that's just not really my personality. Like, I love being surprised by what could be around the corner.
Yeah.
And some, the best things that have come in my life have always been a surprise. And so I think just like the preparation that you could put into that is just being versatile and open to stuff.
Right.
As opposed to, I mean, like, personas are like what you do when you don't have a personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. If just like, oh, I'm going to be the guy, I'm going to dress, you know, in a zoot suit.
Right.
I'm going to be that guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like, you know, I got cool dreads.
Right.
You know, I mean, how you look is a form of communication as much as anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you go too hard in one direction, you better love that direction and be committed to it.
Right.
And maybe I just don't have a direction that I love and want to commit myself to.
Well, I think you love all directions. Like
I love one direction so much. I thought we were going to talk about boy bands on this podcast.
Oh, well, that's the gig you haven't done yet.
Oh man. Call me, guys. I'm available.
Man, is there an NSYNC reunion tour happening?
Oh man, we saw Boys to Men a couple years back. They crushed.
Yeah, I'll bet they did.
We did. Oh, it was great. But okay, we're getting off topic.
But my point is, like, it worked. I went to Atlanta, and I just wasn't, when I first met people, I wasn't so specific and forceful about where I had come from and what I had done.
Yeah.
And,
didn't you get tired of that in L.A.? Like the elevator pitch, everybody coming up and...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so-and-so, but this is what I do.
Yeah.
This is the thing I do. This is who I've done it with.
Right.
Because that's just how LA works. It's fast, and it's just like there's so many people, and like everybody wants attention.
Yeah.
And like, and that's a young man's game.
It is. And you're actually sort of the personification of what I tell people about LA,
mm-hmm.
because like they, you know, sometimes people ask me about the scene there, and I tell them, if you're an extrovert with a short attention span, you'll do great.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you, and just like a little bit dumb. which has worked for me. Moved there, a little bit dumb, didn't know what I was getting involved with. Just like, let's have a good time. LA, what do you need me to be?
No, see, I'm calling bullshit. You didn't move to LA like with the Katy Perry gig in mind.
Absolutely
specifically.
Absolutely not, no.
But you moved to LA because you wanted to do a big-ass arena tour.
No, I don't remember saying that.
I
just moved to LA to work because I was living in Seattle, and I love Seattle being a musician there, but like as a working-class musician, there's no industry.
Right.
And I love Seattle. I love being a musician up there, but how many indie rock bands can I be in?
A lot.
But, and then we can go to Portland every couple of months and play for half a room. but play the coolest music you've ever heard.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right.
And you know, it's just like I love being in all the Pearl Jam guys' side projects. I loved it. I don't remember. I don't really think that was in my mind that I wanted to move to LA to get a big, huge gig. I think I was just wanting to move there just to work and see what happens.
Mm.
But also, my brain's bad, so maybe that's what I wanted to do. Did I? Yeah. So,
do you look back on that like you were with Katie for 6 years?
Over five. Yeah.
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 I mean, do you look back on that chapter and how do you look back on that chapter?
Oh, it was a wild, sloppy, messy circus of drama and egos, and it was fantastic. I was in the mood for it for a bunch of years there. I was absolutely in the mood for it.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot musically playing, you know, working in that situation. There was a level of professionalism on stage musically that I hadn't been exposed to at all. Like that, those bands were laser beams.
Mm. Was it hard to adjust to? Was it scary?
It was very hard to adjust to at first, and but it was exciting to have to learn just learn the ropes on how to be, play in one of those bands. Mm-hmm. And that band in particular. Mm-hmm. That band, you wouldn't think it, but the Katy Perry band is pretty live.
Yeah.
There's tracks going, but we're playing. And
yeah, and she's really singing.
She's really singing. And as much as in the band's hands as we can possibly do. And so, yeah. And just, you know, learning to play in those... Pop music's funny, man, because, like, you're playing robot parts sometimes.
Yeah.
And, like, these, you know, sometimes you're not always in the same pocket as, like, the drums are or the mm-hmm. bass is. You know, sometimes these producer guys throw these songs together, and this kind of swings, this kind of straight, this yeah. is just kind of, this doesn't really go with anything else. And it was a really good exercise to, like, reproduce those things. Because, yeah. like, the tension between them is part of the reason the song's a huge global hit.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
So, like, you can't just... A lot of times it's just not lay back and feel it, man. It's like, no, you got... This has to be here on the beat, and this has to be here, and never the two shall meet.
Right. Right. And coming from the jazz world, like we did...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a version of that, especially in trio music, when, mm-hmm. you know, the piano is down the middle, and the bass is on the back, and the mm-hmm. drums are tipping.
Sure.
But I think it's more subtle than in the pop world.
Well, in jazz, it's like everybody's celebrated for having their own feel.
Right.
Yeah, man. I'm not going to go out there and like, this is how I feel about California girls. This is how I interpret this.
Well, you're touching on something else that has been on my mind since I did the audition for Maggie Rose. Do you remember? It was right after the pandemic, and I came out and
auditioned. Shout out to Maggie. She just put out a new record.
I know, and she's opening up for Dave Matthews
now. Yeah, she's
rad. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But like, I had a great audition, and I felt really good about how I approached that audition and mm-hmm. how I did it. Didn't end up getting the gig, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But it got me thinking about, like, when you audition for something, you kind of got to know the difference between the situations where you have to be an exact thing, mm-hmm. no matter what you think about it, no matter if it fits into your mm-hmm. you know oeuvre or whatever. But there are other opportunities when you can sort of be yourself and say, here's how your shit's going to sound with me in it.
Absolutely.
And that's the approach I took to the Maggie Rose.
And probably was the right approach to do, and even though you didn't get the gig.
Right. It might have been the reason.
Because that style of music is like all about vibe, man.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. So with the Katy Perry thing or with Mitski or like in all these gigs you've done, has there been that calculus as to like, okay, this is a thing where I can kind of be myself and show who I am?
Yeah, with Katy, absolutely not. But with Mitski, for sure. Yeah, she's Mitski is rad, and the MD Patrick is fantastic, and I get to be myself. I actually kind of get to be myself, but I put the limits on mm-hmm. to because like I'm pretty aware of when things clang. Like in a room.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like there's a lot of opportunity. I'm like, I could do a real cool thing right here. Flashy. And like sometimes I do, there's some moments in the show that it makes sense, mm-hmm. but I'm good at putting handcuffs on myself and be like, I'm going to work within this box because I want, if you're on the same, okay, you got to just put your brain out with the audience too. Sometimes
right.
You have to be in the show with them as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you could talk around that metaphysically and whatever, but I think it's just being in the room and just being a truly active participant as much as a player.
Right. And I think that comes from, I mean, I'm sure that's helped by all the listening you do.
Yeah, sure.
Because if most of the listening you ever do is like to your own playing mm-hmm. that you're doing in the context of a gig, I think it's easy to lose touch with, you know, how music hits listeners.
Yeah. It might, yeah, I think the listening helps, but also it's just like, you know, when I first moved to Seattle off the farm, you know, I was, you know, hot shot, look at me, jazz piano guy, woodly, 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 woo. Yeah. And
that's how I came to LA.
Yeah.
Jazz, drums, drums, woodly, drums, yeah, Kansas City and Bobby Watson. Here I am.
And that's great. That's fantastic. But then like, you know, being a jazz pianist is not the, you know, exactly what I wanted to do forever.
Right.
And so once I started playing rock and roll with other guys and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, what do you mean? I can play all these notes. I'm like, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You could also get the hell out of my band. No, but I had really cool kick-ass dudes in Seattle that kind of like whipped me into shape.
Who were they?
Well, I mean, you inverge one, Mike Musburger.
Oh, yeah.
And Andrew McCaig, great guitar player, was in the President of the United States of America. Those guys kind of got me, dragged me into kind of the rock world in Seattle there.
Mm-hmm.
And were pretty formative about just like, hey, man, you got to be cool.
Right.
You can't just, you know, wiggle your fingers over everything, you know. So, you know, guys like that. And playing with, like, you know, I got to play with, like, Mike McCready a bunch. I was in his one of his side projects for years and mm-hmm. kind of seeing, you know, real deal rock and roll kind of vibes and attitudes and just what that energy is.
Well, going back to my, you know, point about sort of being a little bit mysterious, presenting a little bit neutral,
mm-hmm.
like you did this very intentionally when you got to LA, because you came from Seattle. Like, I, you know, not long after we met, I saw pictures of you in Seattle and you looked like Jesus. You had long hair and it was a beard and you were obviously like Seattle rocker guy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But when I met you in LA, you were like clean cut.
Yeah.
Just you sort of wiped the slate clean.
You know, like, is it too lame a thing to say, you know, like when you go through a breakup, you cut your hair, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just like, you want to change it up. But yeah, but I mean, I think I was just real sick of having long hair too. And it's like LA, it's hot, you know, but it's funny. I immediately grew it right back out. You know,
that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you grew it out after you got going in LA and
yeah.
you were doing a shitload of gigs
yeah.
and you were doing a shitload of different gigs.
Yes, I was.
That I think if you had shown up with, you know, the long Seattle grunge hair.
Yeah, it might have pegged me and it pushed me in a direction that I didn't get pushed into.
Especially in LA. I don't think that every scene is like this.
LA is casting, man.
Totally.
It's casting.
Totally. And I think it was like Dan Schnell, the drummer, said, when you meet somebody in LA, it's like they take a Polaroid of you, and every time they see you after that, they just hold that Polaroid up in front
of
your face.
Sure, man. Yeah, sure. And probably guilty as charged. I mean, there's just only so much energy, and like every LA is just wild. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
In a way. I don't really hate on that too much.
I don't either. And I got out of LA before I really started to hate it.
Yeah.
Thankfully. Mm-hmm. You know, I was there for the tour was there for 3 weeks at the beginning of last year, and I had not been back since we moved away. It had been like 7 years since I'd been there.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I wonder how I'll feel about it now.
Yeah.
Because like, I've been in Atlanta so long and I've changed a lot, and mm-hmm. I wonder how LA is going to meet me. And after a week, I was like, I fucking hate it.
Well, I was just there last month for a week. We played with Mitski at the Shrine Auditorium for 3 nights. And we're staying downtown, and well, downtown's downtown. You're not going to love it anyway.
Right.
But I saw my friends.
Yeah.
But like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And like you mentioned just not hating on it. And, you know, I hate it for myself.
Yeah.
But I don't judge anybody who loves it there mm-hmm. and for whom that environment is like,
no, it's,
their blood type.
If you just want to work and you just want to, and you're just career oriented and you're young and you're slightly dumb, go to LA. Absolutely. Just like it worked for me for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it kind of stopped working. The pandemic sort of helped it stop working.
Yeah. And well, and my house burning down in the wildfires.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah. I lost everything I owned in the wildfires.
Including like the bunch of instruments.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. All of it gone. Poof. It's fine. It's fine. I got out with my van and my B3.
This is part of that stuffing it down thing that you mentioned earlier.
I mean, it was a good lesson to be like, things are things.
I mean, that's true.
But I mean, things are important because, you know, I had things from my travels all around the world and like, you know, they reminded me of things and sparked memories and that's important to me. But like, you know, at the end of the day, you just keep moving and buy new shit. You know, and well, I like my keyboards now more than I had than what I had in LA.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Had you set your sights, like, did you want to get out of LA before the house fire or before the pandemic, or did those things sort of say?
Well, we were before the house fire. We were kind of committing a bit. We were looking to buy a house there.
Mm.
We were like trying to do that and getting horribly depressed.
Yeah.
About just like the reality of like, hey, I got a pretty good gig, pays pretty good.
Yep.
I can only live here.
Here,
so,
here being what, Valencia or something?
The worst part of Van Nuys. You know? So, yeah, so I don't know. Maybe all those things were a blessing in disguise because, like, I'm we're super happy here. We're so happy here in Nashville.
I can tell.
Nashville's the best. Come on. You're not. You don't live here. You don't get it.
Yeah.
Nashville's awesome.
No, I don't get it.
You come down and visit.
I do. I come in. Yeah. I come in the side door in places.
Yeah.
And you know, when I started coming up here more, you know, everybody was asking me like, "Are you going to move here? Are you thinking about moving?" I'm like, "No, no. Mm-hmm. We're good in Atlanta. I just want to come up here and participate.
Yeah.
You know, to the extent that I can.
Yeah.
So how have you found? How have you found Nashville? What's your take on where Nashville is at?
I found my tribe immediately.
You did. That's true.
I did. I got so lucky. I found dudes right away, a group of musicians that, and still meeting people left and right. Mm-hmm. This is just it's a musician's wonderland down here.
Yeah.
There's so many people here, and there's work, and everybody's chill. Nobody move here. Wait, I shouldn't be saying this. Hold on. No, Nashville's done.
Right.
Yeah, it's over.
Boom is over.
Yeah, but bubble. I found myself, I came down here and I didn't really have kind of the baggage I did when I moved from Seattle to LA, and I didn't really have
What baggage was that?
Just like, you know, I was kind of burned out on LA, Seattle.
Yeah.
Trying to be a professional musician up there was very challenging.
Yeah.
And I was playing with all the rock star guys. I was playing with Paul Allen, the billionaire guy,
right,
flying around the world doing billionaire shit for 8 years. And like, even then it was just tough to be a musician,
mm-hmm,
you know, and that was frustrating. And I was just like, I need healthcare. So let's move to LA.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there was that. And when you're young, you take things really personally. You know, you start bands and write music, and you know they get whatever kind of success they get, and you know you invest yourself emotionally in things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do that anymore.
Hell no.
No, hell no.
Obviously,
that's for your 20s. So when I moved to Nashville, you know, when COVID hit, I went back to the family farm, and I was farming through that whole time up there in Washington State,
which seemed therapeutic.
Hell no, man! I almost killed myself. No, man, it was brutal. Oh, it was terrible. I had, 100-hour weeks in the heat. I lost 20 pounds the first month. Like, it was saving the family farm stuff.
Yeah.
Like it was half our crew quit during COVID. It was, to keep that farm running, it was really teetering. And I wrecked my hands through all the manual labor, and I had to get hand surgery at the end of that summer in the carpal tunnel surgery on both hands. It wasn't romantic at all. It was cool to go back and hang with family, but I almost killed myself.
No, I don't think that it was romantic or fun in any way. But it seemed like it gave you a chance to just completely disconnect from music.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when you reengaged with it, you sort of like everyone after the pandemic, mm-hmm, you had a different set of priorities.
For sure. And I think my priorities were, I still moved to Nashville, like, oh, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I knew myself a little more about like the things that I truly like and kind of wanted to focus on those a little bit more musically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just sort of completely bypassed the whole lower Broadway.
Oh
thing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, luckily. no hate on Broadway. Broadway's a blast. When I spent, you know, we were at the Ryman for 4 nights and my dad flew into town from Washington State and he loves it. He goes down at 11 o'clock in the morning, stays till 3 a.m, loves country music. And so I was hanging with them after the shows all the time.
Yeah.
And Broadway's, I have a great time on Broadway.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like to work down there personally, like on a direct level.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. I've obviously never worked down there. My partner Matt has done a bunch of work down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did like a round table. Matt did a round table with 4 or 5 drummers, mm-hmm, who are on Broadway like, mm-hmm, regularly. Like,
yeah,
that's their main thing. And it's, mm-hmm, kind of like living in LA. It's like, I want no part of it, but there are people who just fucking love it.
And like, so the progression here is like, you can move to Nashville not knowing anybody, and you start playing on Broadway until you get a touring gig. You tour till you get studio work. You be a studio musician till you produce, and then you produce till you die. That seems to be, from my outside perspective on it, is a thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, you can play on Broadway and eventually get a touring gig.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, there's a progression down here, you know, that it just some yokel from nowhere can come and do.
And it seems to me that if you're not too picky about what touring gig you end up on,
mm-hmm,
that's a good route to go.
If you're young and you just want to get the laps in.
Right.
Yeah, do it.
It's like in the Broadway world, there are people like I'm one of the older drummers who did the touring thing. And a lot of the drummers doing the national tours are younger than me, and I think a lot of them, like, they don't really care what show they're on. Mm-hmm. They love the Broadway world. They love musical theater. Mm-hmm. They love doing that kind of work. They love touring, and they're not too picky, whether it's My Fair Lady or Shrek or Book of Mormon. Like, they don't care.
Yeah.
At this point in my career, I care very much, and the list of shows that I'm actually interested in being away from home for is very short.
Yeah.
So I think you were in the same position in Nashville. You were like, no, I care which touring gig I might end up on.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to throw everything at the wall on Lower Broadway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like, yeah, it's a real luxury to that. I did kind of like meet my people here and kind of get to work in other aspects of music than Lower Broadway, but no hate on it. And like, you know, there's not a lot of keyboard players down there.
Really?
You know,
I guess that's true.
And that said, I'm playing at Acme on Wednesday. I'm sitting in with the band. What am I talking about? I'm playing on Broadway on next Wednesday before I fly to Scotland.
No, you got asked to sit in with a band and they happen to be on Lower Broadway.
Yes. Yeah. They're okay. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's No, man, I'm working on Broadway. I'm doing it. We're playing Devil Went Down to Georgia 3 times that night. No, it's great. No, I think it's fantastic. And, you know, you can look at it as kind of a meritocracy. You know, you show up, you kick ass.
Yeah.
Hopefully people will notice and you get a career going.
Yeah. And I haven't run the numbers, but in my mind, like, Lower Broadway as an entity has to be one of, if not the largest employer of live musicians in the world.
Listen, I've been around the world. There's nothing like it.
It's constant.
Bourbon Street's great. That's not Broadway.
Yeah.
Like Red Light District Amsterdam or like Reeperbahn in Germany. Like all these places that are like, oh, this is the musician kind of thing.
Right.
No, Broadway's, you stand on the corner, there's 20 bands playing.
Right. It's just this huge chaos. Organism from 11 a.m. to 2 a.m.
It's a mess of humanity. This is what it is. That's what we are, guys.
Right.
You know, go stand on the corner of Broadway and just see, look at our species.
I should run the numbers sometime, just like a back of the napkin. Like if the average band down there is 4 pieces and there's 30 bars.
And there's 3 bands per bar.
Right. 4 sets per day.
Yeah.
Like 4 shifts
four
per day.
4 shifts a day, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they are employing a lot of musicians down there.
And it's great. And that's why it exists. It exists for that. That's the other thing about that's different than Nashville and L.A. L.A. I would get bummed out because it's not the big industry down there.
Right.
It's just not.
Right.
It's kind of small beans compared to all the other stuff going there.
That's true.
You know, even though like some of the biggest gigs you can get on the planet are based out of there and like, you know, it's culturally very important. It's still just one of the things down there.
Yep.
You know, the movie
this is something I realized. After getting more hip to Nashville, I was like, so L.A. is the entertainment town, and music is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
New York is arts town,
sure,
and music is part of that. But Nashville is just fucking music town.
100%.
That's it.
And that's a good feeling. It's good. It's a funny little microcosm bubble, and maybe someday it'll change. I sure hope not in my lifetime, because I love it here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Nashville is growing. But for right now, it's Music City.
Another thing I want to ask you as sort of like a semi-newcomer to Nashville is we talk a lot about sort of the soul of Nashville and it seems to me there's a battle for the soul of Nashville right now between like the old guard, established country, the stuff that Nashville is known for and, you know, newer, younger generations of, you know, people other than white men, music other than country.
Mm-hmm.
It seems these... I don't know how at odds these two camps are.
I don't see any of it.
Really?
I honestly don't feel any of that. And it might just be the privileged kind of circles that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think, yeah, if you're frustrated trying to break into like the old school, studio musician thing and you're not getting there, I could see you getting frustrated and think that way,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. I don't know. I don't, for me personally, I don't get a lot of that energy from the people that I'm around.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, my first gig down here was Tanya Tucker, and that's old school country.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, I started playing for Joss Stone,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, she's a British soul singer. That's here.
Right.
I've been pretty lucky to be able to kind of bounce around the different genres. And like, I can't really wrap my head around that the drama of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's there, but maybe I'm just like privileged and I don't know about it.
Well, this is another difference between you and me, is that I look for drama to wrap my head around.
Yeah. Yeah. You do. But I don't feel that I have to pick any side. You know, all the mainstream country guys that I hang with, they're great.
Yeah.
They're the sweetest guys, and they can play. And like, maybe that's just because my upbringing is country and I can hang with the dudes.
I guess that's true. I didn't think about
that. Yeah, I grew up redneck's not a great term, but I mean, yeah, I grew up on a hay farm and my family's all farmers, and
right.
you know, I'm a high school dropout and I was just farming until I was like, hey, let's go move to the city to try to play piano. And like, 90s country is like my wheelhouse.
Right.
Like, I know the lyrics to everything that comes on the radio station.
Yeah.
And that's just my culture that I grew up in.
Right.
So like, so I don't look at any of that part of Nashville as like enemy at all.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough. Because they're writing, singing songs for the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I don't know. But also, you know, I guess there's a thing between, it feels political between like guys like, like liberal country, like Jason Isbell and those guys. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, then you got your Jason Aldeans and whatever. And everybody's trying to like, you know, they're trying to pit these things together. And a lot of those people are buying into it.
Yes.
They're really leaning into it.
Right.
And I'm not going to, I'm in the middle, man. I love each side of it to a certain degree.
And I guess that's a good point. Like if I'm looking for drama or if I'm looking for conflict, there's mm-hmm. probably more within the country world in Nashville than there is between like the country stuff and everything else.
Yeah.
I look for drama.
I mean,
I look for reasons to be cynical.
No, I understand that. And like, it's hard. Okay. Genres of music come from culture.
Mm-hmm.
And if that culture doesn't align with your values, then you could see that music as an enemy.
Sure.
And maybe there's a certain degree of truth behind that, mm-hmm. because music is impactful to the way people think.
Mm-hmm.
That said, good song's a good song, buddy. So
for sure.
There you go.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm historically not a country listener. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting more and more hip to different things, and I'm trying mm-hmm. to bring Christina along.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's obvious to say, but it took me too long to realize that some of the greatest songs ever written and some of the greatest voices mm-hmm. ever heard are in the country world.
For sure.
So I'm telling this to Christina and she's like, all right, just make me a playlist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I love it all, man. Again.
Yeah.
I'm not, no sides being picked here.
Right. I mean, you also take that approach. You have that agnosticism and that omnivorousness when it comes to drummers.
Yeah.
Because like, you've played with a lot of different kinds of drummers.
I have.
A lot of different.
There's been a lot of famous drummers in my life.
Right. Right. Yeah. So when you were with the Katie gig, there was a drummer transition during that time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pretty gross one, but yeah. NDAs, but no, yeah, it was Adam Marcello for a very long time. Just what a killer drummer.
Yeah,
love that guy. Great friend still.
He lives in Ireland now, right?
No, he's teaching at Berkeley now.
Oh fuck!
So he's
okay,
back. He's living in Rhode Island, and he's MDing. He's going back to Ireland and MDing a bunch of artists over there and playing for them. So he's bouncing around. He's internet. Adam Marcello's global.
Yeah,
yeah. And then Tony Royster Jr. came in on the Witness tour. I think that was like 2017.
Yeah.
That was a change of pace.
Right.
For sure.
So in terms of the drum chair, like you talked about coming into Katie's band as the keyboardist, and just, you know, being in a very specific box, you're like, I'm not going to change one of Katy Perry's songs.
Yeah.
What did you observe about like the transition in the drum chair?
How much crap could I talk on this podcast? Tony's great. Okay. Tony, I love Tony. Tony's cool. Love him, hate him. But, yeah, well, okay. So I was MDing for Joss Stone, and Joss wanted Tony to come out for a one-off. Because
that's right,
because
like you played with Tony in Katie's band, and then he crossed your path again.
Yeah,
with
when
Joss
I was MDing for Joss,
right.
And he came out for just one show. We had 25 songs to just very little rehearsal time, and he came out and killed it.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Joss like go way back, and it was cute to see. He really respects her and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, Tony and I are cool, but the Katie gig, yeah, he came into it thinking he was kind of, you know, hold the phone up to his ear before you know we try to run something at a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't understand that the MD Chris Pooley is a gnarly dude and knows his shit. Drum core nerd.
Oh man,
knows his stuff. And the first week of rehearsals was, you know, kind of like breaking a horse.
Mm.
And then Tony, it took about a week, and then Tony got on board and crushed it.
Yeah.
Crush that gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he like it became apparent to him very quickly that like I can't just
It became it took a week for him to really digest it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more.
And was it in terms of knowing the material or getting it right stylistically?
Or just realizing how precise and how specific things are.
Yeah.
And feels and stuff like that.
Right.
Like we were talking about Roar.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's a specific thing. Man.
It is.
Yeah. Don't R&B that. but it was great. And, working with Chris Pooley was always really great because, just on top of it and tough MD.
Yeah. And I mean, I would prefer a tough MD.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like I want sort of a steady, firm hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of the job is to set the tone and give you, you get, it's just like sports. If you trust the coach and you're going to play better,
Right.
It's just, it's a mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, and that band, it very much was kind of like sports vibes.
Hmm.
Was the energy within that band, which can be great or can be toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in that case, it made a very good band.
It did. It was a slamming band.
And Tony, I think, is still doing the gig.
Yeah. He's doing it in Vegas, right?
I think Vegas just wrapped up.
And, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing now.
Yeah. And he's gone through this transition or maturation or something in his career, and I'm sure doing the Katie gig was a big part of it because he was like child prodigy guy for so long and was kind of put up on stage to do a bunch of fucking circus tricks and he was that guy for a while and playing the Katie gig, like I think the identity that he's embracing now is like, I just want to play the fucking song.
That's good. That's healthy. That's great. And that's employable.
Yeah. Highly.
Yeah. Highly employable.
So he also played with Joss and did you play with Ash Sohn on Joss's
No, I never played. He was Joss kind of has like a US and Europe band. So
right.
Ash was doing some Europe stuff that I wasn't a part of.
Yeah.
Met him. Nice guy.
Yeah. I interviewed him and he's a super sweet guy.
Yeah.
And just one of my favorite drummers. Every time I see him on IG, he's just doing something loose and goofy and funky.
He kind of played that Joss gig kind of like a rock gig. He kind of rocked it. He had an angle on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He went for it.
Cool.
Yeah. That big old snare drum of his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The purple heart.
Punching you in the face. Yeah. It's cool.
So another ambition that I would like to script for you is doing more MDing.
Okay.
I feel like you've played under so many MDs in so many contexts that you have a really good feel for, like a coach, like sort of getting the best out of people, knowing which buttons you have to push with different people. Is that something you want to do more of?
Yeah, I enjoy it when it comes. I don't promote myself as that. When it comes down the line, that's like, okay, can you MD this? I'll do it. And it's fun. It's a lot of emails and stress.
Yeah.
But it can be super rewarding and, I'm open to it, but like I'm not the right MD for every situation.
Right. I mean, nobody
is. But like,
is.
If it makes sense, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm into it.
So bringing it back to the B3 and like how drummers play with the B3, are there a couple of records, are there a couple of drummers that you can point to over the, you know, the history of the B3, whether it's Jimmy Smith or Joey DeFrancesco or whoever, where you listen to that drummer play with the organ and you're like, that's what it is?
Well, none of those guys played with chumps. You know, like if you're playing with Jimmy Smith and you're on a record or something,
yeah,
you probably got it. You probably got it.
Right.
Or you probably wouldn't be there.
But is there a particular one that you gravitate towards?
Well, you were just saying the other night, you know, Idris Muhammad.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Come on. That's a whole thing. I'm going to say no to that. Though I used to play in LA with Jimmy Smith, the drummer. Who's on like some Groove Home stuff. He's on the recording of Misty, which was a hit.
Oh, wow.
And he was Larry Young's cousin.
Yeah, yeah.
And like he was, you know, he was an organ drummer.
Yeah.
He was a cool old guy. He was going to tell you where it's at. and you went along with it. Yeah. No, it's his tempo.
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah. For sure.
And he's 100% right. But no, I mean, name dropping organ drummers, I don't know, they're all pretty great. Sorry.
there isn't a record that you listened like, well, let's bring it back to the B3 players.
Yeah.
Like we did this Dr. Lonnie Smith and Joey D tribute last night, and those are obviously two of the giants and two of your heroes. I think Lonnie is in particular kind of
Spiritually, absolutely. Yeah. He should be most organ players guy as far as just like how to be.
Right.
You know.
If people listening aren't that hip to this whole world, are there a couple of records that you might point them to just say, here's some real shit.
Check out Think, Lonnie Smith Think, check out Spiral, check out any of the stuff that he did with George Benson.
Oh,
early
yeah.
Stuff. All that George Benson stuff is great, man.
Right.
There's like two records that I know of that are out there, like early Dr. Lonnie Smith. Yeah, that would be a good place to start. But I mean, so talking organ drummers, who's Bill Stewart's one of the great organ drummers.
Man,
he doesn't sound like an organ drummer.
I never thought about that because like people who listen to this know that Bill Stewart is on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
But of course,
he doesn't sound like any organ drummer, but he's one of the best organ drummers that's ever done the damn thing.
Yeah. With Larry.
With Larry and anybody else, you know?
Man.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, don't box yourself in, drummers. You can be yourself in a B3 situation.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just relax. Don't panic.
Well, I mean, it's almost
don't
like,
watch my feet.
it's almost like your approach when you moved to LA and the approach that you recommended when I moved to Atlanta. It's like when I started playing with you in the B3, I just found it easy to be a simpler version of myself.
Okay.
Like I didn't have to shed any part of my personality. It was just I didn't have to try so hard on any particular front.
Sure. Well, maybe it's just because there's less kids that you had to wrangle. You know, you weren't wrangling a piano player and a bass player,
right?
Who maybe you're disagreeing.
Yeah. And never, let's not even get into the fucking horns.
Oh yeah. Oh dear God. No. Nashville's got great horn players.
They do.
Shout out to
they
all
do.
The boys and girls. You get it. I knew immediately once I started playing with you. They're like, "Oh yeah, this is my guy. This is it."
I felt the same way.
And like that's the case with. I mean, when I you know almost right off the band when you play with a drummer if he gets it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's just trying to do too much, too excited.
Or just again doesn't understand the flow of it.
Yeah.
You know the feel of it. But again, don't compromise your artistic integrity to try to fit into a box that you think you need to be in to play with the organ.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And it's one of the things we talk about all the time is that like aside from whatever you actually do on the drums, and I would imagine you feel this way, especially on the organ too, like if you can sound like yourself in any situation, I mean, you mentioned Bill Stewart. He can do that. Steve Gadd can do that. Steve Jordan can do that. That, I think, is really the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, absolutely. And also let's talk about Pitar a bit. Is Pitar an organ drummer? Pitar's gonna Pitar. And like, you know, those Corey Wong pockets are particular and generally don't exist in the organ world, but we he does them.
Right.
And we stay there with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's not traditional like organ drum playing at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a crispness.
Yes.
To the beat interpretation.
To say the least.
Yes. there's you're on a part of the beat and it's a Ferrari, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it speaks to what I was saying earlier about how you have this ability to help people sound good as themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, in Uncle Bronco, mm-hmm. it's not like what you do on the organ on Uncle Bronco is not what you did last night mm-hmm. on the Joey D and Dr. Mm-hmm. Lonnie Smith thing. I think Uncle Bronco is built around pitar.
Yeah,
to my ear,
very much so.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Just energy wise, and
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
you were.
We're on the pitar train, absolutely. all on board. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All aboard, like, or you're gonna get fucking run over.
Absolutely.
Woo.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. What were you? Where was?
Well, no, it's just an example of how you can. You're still yourself in that band.
Oh, absolutely. Just a version of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe a amped up, you know, on trucker speed version of it. You know? That's great. It's fun to explore different parts of your personality.
Yeah. And it reminds me of what Mark Maron says about acting and great actors. It's like, you know, most of the great actors are some version of themselves mm-hmm. in every role
yeah.
they do.
Sure.
They just are able to sort of, they know, you know, what the frequencies of their personality are mm-hmm. and they can turn certain things up. They can turn other things down.
Absolutely.
But they're still themselves.
That's 100% what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, unless it's a big pop gig and you're playing synthesizer hooks.
There's that.
Play the hooks.
I remember you got that Katy Perry gig and you were excited. You were like, I'm playing all the hooks.
Yeah.
Like, it's all me.
If I screw up, that's it.
Oh, man.
It's fun. But as far as just like you were saying, like me, like trying to elevate like every situation or whatever. I mean, it's just we're having conversations.
You know?
And if you just talk all the time, that's boring.
Right.
And I remember a thing my mom told me when I was younger. She's like, I hate boring people. Don't be boring. Boring is the worst.
Man, so this is all just to fill the mom-shaped hole in your heart.
Yeah, let's talk. Maybe this is therapy. No, but I just remember thinking that, yeah, it sucks to be boring. And like, if we're just going on and on and on, that's boring and everybody else is bored. And mm-hmm. Let's not be bored on the planet. Let's have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you talk about elevating whatever situation you're in. Like, you don't elevate situations from a place of like, this has to be higher, like this has to be more high-minded. You're not elevating it in that sense. It's just sort of helping that whatever that thing is, you're going to help it be the best version of itself.
That's what I try to do.
Sometimes it's highbrow, sometimes it's lowbrow, sometimes it's substantive, sometimes it's poppy bullshit.
Absolutely.
But I think you're...
That was a lot of judgment right there. Damn. I just got a whiplash. Okay, let's move on.
Let's not
unpack any of that.
One of the things I admire about you is that you put all of those things on equal footing in terms of what the music
does.
Because
people love those things.
Yes. Yeah.
People love those things. They love what they love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not judging them for that.
Right.
You know, I'll judge them for who they are, not what they love. No, I'm just kidding. That's a dumb thing to say. But yeah, people... Why would I be a part of something that somebody loves and not try to make it the thing that they love more than it would be without me?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I don't know. I think it maybe just comes from respect.
Man, there's a there's a concept. Fuck.
Yeah.
And it does boil down to that because I have a hard time if I don't respect a person or if I don't respect the way they play, I think I'm way quicker than you to not respect someone or something for any given reason, and some of them are valid.
Yeah, you certainly are.
No, it's true. And one of the things you said offhand that has stuck with me, I think we were texting and we were gonna play a gig together and I was asking like what we should wear I was talking about some outfit I was going to put together. Should it be this shirt or that shirt? And I was like, this one feels a little more whimsical. Mm-hmm. And you texted back, I could use more whimsy from you in general.
Well, and now I got it. Yeah. Look what we got. Well,
I'm getting
there. Now here we are.
I'm getting there.
Yeah. Let this podcast episode attest right. to the whimsical nature. Zachary Albetta.
Where are we at time-wise? I think we did
forever.
It. Good. Yeah.
Forever. You better edit it this down. This
no, is, I think this is.
We didn't even talk about cymbals, bro.
Man, well,
we love them, right?
What do you have to say about cymbals?
Ah, they're metal. They're round. Some of them round.
Yeah, most of them are.
Don't
round.
Put holes in them.
But except for the middle one.
I guess if you have to,
you need that one. Yeah.
All right, compromises. It's always compromises with you drummers.
That's true. I mean, you're better at compromising with drummers than anybody I know.
Yeah.
I think that's why you're here.
I love you all like my children.
Well, man, it was great playing with you last night.
Yeah,
it
was
great to see you.
Smoking show. We'll be doing more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Grab you when you're not on the road.
Yeah. And I mean, grab me when you're not on the road.
Well, we're on the road a lot.
I know, man.
It's good. Yeah. It's good to be busy.
I appreciate you, buddy. I love you.
Love you too.
There he is, Ty Bailey. They only made one of that guy. If you're in Nashville and you haven't gotten a chance to hear him play or hang with him or play with him, do yourself a favor and figure out a way to make those happen. As you can hear, he's game. Thanks again to him for that hang. Next week, Matt Krause is talking with Justin Amaral, who works with artists like Fred Kaplan and Tim Carroll in Nashville. He has a new album called Life in Grooveland, The Hymnal, which features duets for percussion and a different instrument for each of the 10 tracks. Hope you check that out. Until then, stay safe, stay sane, play pretty, and thanks for listening. Cheers.